From his victory speech and throughout this abbreviated transition period, President-elect Bush has talked about reaching across party lines. And with a split Senate and a House with only a slender Republican majority, it certainly seems in the interest of all concerned to reach bipartisan agreement just to keep government going. But is bipartisanship really possible in an electoral democracy? Joining us now to talk about this is Calvin McKenzie, professor of political science at Colby College in Maine. But you join us in our studios. Thanks for being with us, Professor.
Nice to be here. Good morning.
Let me ask you to first cast back to the past a bit. Was there a time, in your knowledge, that we could actually refer to there being a bipartisan spirit of government in this country?
We don't have any great tradition of that, Scott, in America. We don't have a great tradition of partisanship, actually, in America. We've, compared to other democracies, we've had less partisanship, certainly less rigid partisanship than most other countries. We have a different kind of government than most other democracies. We do see, if you look back over the period, say, from the end of World War II, you do see a couple of kinds of bipartisanship that emerge from time to time. One is personnel. We have had most of the post-war presidents have appointed one or two or maybe even a few more people to their cabinets or sub-cabinets from the other party. Mm-hmm. We've also had some moments of what I might call opportunistic legislative consensus, where leaders in the two parties came together for important legislative purposes. Certainly our foreign policy during the Cold War, I think, falls into that category. Although I think one can overstate that, there were some internationalists in both parties, particularly in the Senate, which was the much more important body in the Congress on foreign policy in those days. Civil Rights Act of 1964, a case where it required Republican votes, even though there were big Democratic majorities. The Southern Democrats weren't voting for it. I remember talking to Hubert Humphrey's sister one time, and he said to me, Hubert was the floor manager of that bill, and she said to me, you know, Hubert performed social psychology on Everett Dirksen for months to get that bill passed. Dirksen, the Republican leader at the time.
I mean, we should explain, for benefit of those who listening who might not quite remember this, most of the votes against that civil rights bill
were Southern Democrats. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
As we cast back to let's say, a period like the 1964 civil rights movement, when you had the Republican leader of the Senate, Everett Dirksen, joining with administration policy to get the civil rights bill passed, is that harder to do these days?
I think it's much harder to do. I think getting any kind of bipartisan activity, especially in the Congress these days, is much harder. But again, we need to note it's much harder to get any kind of activity in the Congress these days. It's simply a much more difficult time to govern. In 1948, Harry Truman went around the country castigating the do-nothing 80th Congress, a Republican-majority Congress. That Congress passed 908 public bills. No Congress since 1958 has come close to that, and the last four or five Congresses have passed about half that many bills. So it's simply much harder to legislate, even when there are large partisan majorities and the presidents of the same party these days. Mm-hmm. But there are a couple of things that have changed that have made bipartisanship much more difficult. One is a real revolution in the way we apportion and then set up congressional districts in this country, a revolution wrought by the Supreme Court in the early 1960s. We had gone for decades without changing the lines of congressional districts, and then the court said, no, the rule here is one person, one vote, and you've got to, you state legislatures have to redraw your districts. And that, of course, is a political process done by the dominant party in the state legislature, and what happened in most states was they drew districts where their party would be strong. Mm-hmm. And a few districts where the other party would be strong, but fewer of those districts. Yeah. What we see now is that about 80% of the districts, congressional districts in this country, are not very competitive at all. They're dominated by one party or the other. And at the same time that was happening, the direct primary was becoming the principal way of getting nominated to Congress. And we know that primaries have very low voter turnout, and the people who turn out tend to be the extremists in the two parties. So, for example, if you have a dominant Republican district, the people picking the nominee are likely to be the right wing of the Republican Party in that mm-hmm. district.
I wonder if the ways in which Congress now works, as opposed to a generation ago, has also made bipartisan agreements more difficult.
Absolutely. There are a couple of things that have changed in that time, and I would point to one of them, which I think has a big impact here, and that is the opening up of the Congress to public view. Mm-hmm. prior to night. Prior
you mean
to,
C-SPAN?
Yeah, well, that's just a piece of the action, as it turns out. If you go back, if you were to go back to Congress, even in the 1960s, you would find that about a third of all the committee hearings were held in executive session. That means they closed the doors, nobody in there but the members and their staffs. That members infrequently cast a vote on the floor of the House or the Senate that was recorded. They had teller votes and voice votes, but you couldn't tell how your member voted. Neither House of Congress was televised at that point. So a member of Congress could go through a two-year Congress and only cast a couple of hundred recorded votes, and none of the work that was done in committee was recorded in any way. Now, that made it a lot easier to do a deal.
Is there any advice you'd offer to President Bush?
Well, this is a...
Or, to that matter, to the Democratic leadership of the Senate.
It's a tough business, and legislating these days is a retail activity. You put majorities together one vote at a time, and I think one thing that this new president may have going for him is that he has a reputation for being personally affable and good at interpersonal relations, and that actually is worth something these days. These are people, and dealing with people, and getting them to listen to you and perhaps even to follow what you'd like them to do. Sometimes at the margins of policymaking can make a difference. But the reality is I don't think we could have constructed a more vexing and less opportunistic environment for a new president to step into and have some kind of a legislative program be successful.
Professor, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Calvin McKenzie, political science professor at Colby College in Waterville, Maine.